fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames Hockey Talk.
Streak snapped, line combos are a mess, and now a rumored rift between Sutter and Huberdeau. What a mess. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered as we are on a Wednesday evening. Show's hosted by Brad Brood and Kyle Lewis. Kyle, good to have you with us again tonight.
Yes, actually got some positive things to talk about this week.
So. We do. Two wins. Jeez. Yeah. Snap this damn streak. We're moving in the right direction. I mean, not maybe the prettiest of wins.
Far from it, but it's a start.
I don't know. Well, and we're going to get to that. I don't know. I did, you know what I did Saturday night? I did nothing. It was cold here and snowy. And I was the first time this year I've been able to not have anything on the calendar where I could just sit down and watch early games and late games of Hockey Night in Canada. And, God, it was fun. It was really fun to watch.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of did the same thing. It wasn't snowy here. Actually, didn't snow here at all until today. But it was nice to just sit down and take in a game and not really have to think about anything else. And just, and I mean, again, the fact that it was a positive result certainly helped. But
I had a good feeling, though. Didn't you have a good feeling before puck drop that night? I just did. I don't know. I just had a good feeling Saturday night. And it turned out to be really good. And it was great having Rick Ball back. It's so
different. I think that was where the good feeling came from, actually.
Probably. You know, probably. Yeah. It's funny. You know, I didn't understand how much I enjoyed listening to him until he was gone. So.
Yep. Well, it's like anything. You don't know what you get until it's gone, right?
That's right. That's right. What do you think of Markstrom's new, what do you call it, retro mask?
It's funny. People that aren't even Flames fans have been tagging me and posts about it on social media. It's really, really cool. I know you're not a fan of Blasty, but I think it does go well with that jersey. And it's goalie masks have always been kind of a passion of mine. I just think it's one of the legendary ones, like Cujo or, you know, Ed Belfour's and Roman Turek's in Calgary, the Iron Maiden mask. It's right up there. I mean, it's a really, really cool mask.
You know, I thought it was really cool, too. I'm not a Blasty fan. But you know what? These reverse retro, the pedestal black ones, they're starting to grow on me. I'm seeing a lot of tweets here in the last day since they've been released, and that's growing on me. I think this mask will go good with that, too. Yeah. It's a real different mask. It's almost it's crazy how good they've gotten. And I know Dave Art does just unbelievable stuff. And, like, this one is almost even more three-dimensional, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I thought the same thing. Like, it pops more.
Yeah, it just has a different look to it. I don't... Yeah,
I think you're right. How it goes with the pedestals, too. But, I mean, it's funny that it's growing on you because we haven't even seen it in game action yet. And we're going to in a few weeks, I believe. Is it next week?
No, I don't know. I could be wrong there.
I think it's December 4th for some reason. It's a bunch of games in December, but... If it's growing on you now, I'm really curious what you're going to think of it after we see it in an actual game.
I've got the schedule right here. December 3rd, December 5th, December 7th, and the 14th.
Yeah, like we said before, it's still so strange. I just lump them all together. But
all in one.
Anyway, we'll see. That'll be a true test of whether or not they're popular or not.
Trying to sell jerseys for Christmas is what they're trying to do.
Yeah, but you still think they wear in the new year. It's just strange. But anyway.
That is weird. I know. That is really, really weird. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it, though, actually. And that's crazy for me to say because I'm so old school. I love their home and away jerseys, and I don't know. It's going to be different. They better win their first game or I won't like them. So,
because I'm all on the jerseys.
No pressure there. So today we're going to discuss three games, two of them wins, and then we'll talk some Flames news, injuries, call-ups, losing streak metrics, and all that good stuff, followed by... A rumored rift between Sutter and Huberdeau. It's crazy weird, and we'll give our take on that. And the line combinations are, I don't even have a word to describe the line combinations, but Kyle and I will link the
description. Give it our best shot.
Yeah, we'll give it our best shot on that one. And then we'll wrap with a preview of the three games coming up this week. Thank you for joining us on Flames Unfiltered. All right, Cal. We ended the road trip in Boston and end it with a loss. A 3-1 game. I don't know. I didn't think we were horrendous in this game, though. Did you?
No, not at all. In fact, I thought they were quite good for most of it, and I agreed with Daryl Sutter's comments about how the Flames are actually playing quite well, just not getting any results. I had no issue with the loss in Boston. It just, they played a really good team and came out on the wrong end of it.
Vladar got the start. I thought he was really good, actually. I thought he probably earned a start Saturday night in Winnipeg by how he played in Boston.
Yep, I did too, and I think I tweeted that, actually. But I also understand the desire, and it seems to be working, you know, to get Markstrom in there. I mean, he's made the last couple of games, and we'll talk more about that, obviously, but the last couple of games he's made some crazy, crazy nice saves. So I think he's starting to find his rhythm. So I still want to see Vladar get those starts we were told he'd get. I don't think he's in that groove yet, but hopefully that's coming.
No Huberto, no Stone, no Tanev. The one thing that did bother me about this game is that Mangiapane, Dubé, and Toffoli all had point-blank scoring chances and couldn't find the back of the net. And that's the difference between, you know, the wins, if you look at last night's game, compared to this game in Boston. I thought we probably played better in Boston. But a late penalty by Richie's kind of squandered any hope, and I don't know. All in all, I thought a really good, hard-working effort. Just honestly summed it up by saying we didn't capitalize when we had opportunities.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. And like you mentioned, those guys that contributed nothing. That was a big problem too. And I mean, I feel like a lot of those guys. Toffoli's been pretty good all year. I think Dubé is in a pretty concerning slump right now that hopefully is about to turn the corner on. But even though those guys, you know, didn't have a great game, it was kind of refreshing, and not to pick on any particular player, but it was kind of refreshing to see that there are consequences for some poor play, because Kevin Rooney hasn't seen the ice. No. And he will at some point, as we both know, but his expected goals when he was on the ice was like 0%. Like, it was, I'm not big on advanced stats.
You know, I'm not either. I don't think either one of us are big on advanced
stats. No, because we don't talk about a lot on the show, and I mean, partly because we don't really have to. The stats are there if people want to read them. Yeah. You know, we know that Chris Tanev drives play in the right direction, is great at suppressing chances, for example. We don't need to read numbers to know that. But they're very, very telling. And in the case of, you know, Kevin Rooney, it was very clear that, holy shit, did he struggle.
He did. He's been weird this year. There's been a couple games, and I've tried to give him the benefit of the doubt and the fact that it's like, well, I didn't really recognize Rooney out there tonight. And then I thought, well, maybe that's good. He's on the fourth line center, and maybe that's good. But, you know, you can't say that every game. Like, eventually, I know you're on the fourth line. I'm going to have to notice you for a strong forecheck. I'm going to have to notice you for winning a key faceoff. I'm going to have to notice you for those attributes we expect out of a fourth line center. And I haven't really seen him lately, and either is Daryl Sutter, and now he's not dressing.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, we know he's going to come back in, but I agree with your observations too. In terms of a guy like that, usually it's a positive thing if you don't notice him. He didn't do anything glaringly bad that really stands out in my mind, and I do feel that he has a bit of a bad rap amongst the Flames fan base because he was the first signing after Gaudreau walked, right? So, and that's not on him, and that's not fair. It has nothing to do with anything. But
no.
Hopefully when he comes back in, he can redeem himself and play well. But thus far, taking him out from the team standpoint has been seemingly the right move.
Yeah, and then on Saturday night, Winnipeg comes to town for Hockey Night in Canada battle. And in the morning, it sounded like Tanev was possible. Then in the afternoon, it sounded like he was a no-go. And then warm-ups happen. And Flames Twitter goes crazy as Tanev is on the ice, and he's back. Connor Mackey also comes into the lineup, and DeSimone and Gilbert step out. Jonathan Huberdeau and Stone remain out, and just having Tanev is... It scares me how...
Reliant they are on him?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I thought the same thing, yeah. I had tweeted the other night about how I chastised that contract and thought it was awful and questioned, honestly, whether signing him over keeping Brody, not that they didn't try, but Tanev for Brody was a really bad move, potentially, and I was so wrong. But I do think that there is some concern, as there should be, around the amount that this team relies on him, because he plays the kind of game that is susceptible to injuries, right, as we've seen. And I did find it a little strange, too, that he, like, that back and forth all day, but will he or won't he? And then he plays well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then but then the narrative is all like, oh, he's 100%. Well, if he's 100%, why was it such a mystery whether or not he'd play? Like, is it all just lip service? Like, how is he actually feeling? Same as Huberto. Is he really, you know, back to 100% as he claims?
Do you feel like, and I think it might be just the way Tanev plays, but I catch myself holding my breath a lot. And maybe just since he got injured in the playoffs last year and it was just such a disaster for us after, that I find myself, like, I don't know. I find myself just, like, holding my breath every time he goes into the corner. And he fell awkwardly on, God, was it against L.A.? He went kind of awkwardly into the end boards and not super hard, but I was just like, oh, geez. You know, and I think it's because we see how important he is to this team. And now every time he's in a situation where he could get injured, it scares the hell out of me.
Well, and if you remember the injury against Dallas that took him out of the playoffs, it was a pretty routine-looking play, but kind of scary how it went down. Like, he kind of got more or less crushed on the ice there, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel, especially with a shoulder injury for a guy that blocks shots and checks and plays hard in the corners and stuff, shoulder injury is not something you want to see for anybody, let alone a guy that relies a lot on his shoulders to play the way that he does. See, I kind of have a bit of that hesitance, too. I mean, I think he's generally been a pretty durable player, but I do get concerned about it as he ages and his contract ages, right, because they are so reliant on him.
So do you – yeah, I don't know. And he just – I don't know. It might just be in my head that I just feel like he's so fragile right now, and it's maybe because we didn't think he was coming back in the lineup and did. But all in all – He's played great in the two games he's returned. It wasn't like when he returned for Edmonton, you know, in the Edmonton series where I was just like, oh, you can tell he's 40%. Well, I did not
know. I was told when I was there prior to game three by some friends, some of the players, and they said, like, we talked to the players this morning, and they said Chris Tanev should absolutely not be playing. You know, it was useless. They basically taped a stick in his hands, and I don't know what they thought they'd gain by doing it. They weren't going to win the series with Chris Tanev at that capacity anyway, but I thought it was a dumb move to rest him. I know it's the playoffs, but he was not in any shape to be playing an NHL playoff game by any stretch of the imagination.
Trevor Lewis gets the game winner on Saturday night on a shorthanded goal.
Those Lewis's, I tell you.
Yeah.
What a bunch.
That's a good move. I surprised the hell out of me. Did he not surprise you?
Well, it did. It absolutely looked like a grinder scoring a pretty goal, though, because just like the lack of fluidity in his shoulders as he made the deke and how he kind of chopped the back end. And, like, it was a pretty goal, but, like, he was, like, inches from, like, taking the goalie out and it's goalie interference kind of thing. Like, it was a great play, and it was cool to see him score it, but lack of finesse was just hilarious to me.
Did you not, like, when we scored a shorthanded goal, I was like, is that not our first shorthanded goal of the year? And I looked it up, it was our third. I freaking forgot the first two. They must have been in, like, game one and two because...
Yeah, they were early for sure.
I don't remember them at all. Another situation I wanted to get your take on is the Coleman slew foot where he was fined $5,000 for it, I believe.
Yeah. Maximum allowable $5,000, yep.
Did you, I don't know, did you think this was like an egregious slew foot?
No, not really.
I didn't think it was like...
I was actually surprised he got fined.
I was too. I was kind of surprised when I saw that. How about Markstrom... I don't know. Did Markstrom stick his leg out to trip?
No.
I did not either. I thought he was...
I watched that play probably 20 times, and it's just, like, he didn't at all. I don't know why Dubois was so upset, and in the moment, you don't always know what happened. Like, I got run over a year ago because a guy thought I slew with him. He stepped on my stick, like, you know, and he leveled me for it. Like, leveled me. So, like, in this case, it's just... I understand he thought something happened, but I'm sure when he saw the replay, he's like, oh, no, it bumped into me.
But basically, then why did the whole Hockey Night in Canada panel say, oh, yeah, Markstrom knew exactly what he was doing?
Because that's what they do sometimes, just to piss people off and create discussion. I don't know. And you can look at it different ways, but I really didn't see anything by that whatsoever.
I thought Markstrom had a pretty decent game against Winnipeg.
That windmill save was...
Oh, that was 10 bell.
Man, that was awesome. I mean, and that's the kind of save you want to see from him, to try to find his game a bit more consistently, because his stats still are subpar. Some of the goals he's allowed this year, especially those, how many games did he allow in the first shot. It's really nice to see him do something like that and kind of a showy save, like, because he's been getting dumped on a lot and hasn't played that great. And then he made another one in the following game. Like, he hasn't settled in just yet, but I think his game's trending the right way.
Yeah, I thought he was – I always feel like he's getting there, you know. I did not at all like the second and the fourth goal against the Kings on Monday night. I hated both of them, as a matter of fact. And
yeah, I wasn't a fan either.
It kind of made me just feel like, ugh. But then you know what? With 21 seconds to go, he stones Kopitar and saves the game. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's why we pay him. You know, I mean, that's what we need. But we have to somehow get him to not, every game it seems like he's got one leaky one. And that's not Jacob Markstrom. And that's why his numbers are what they are. I mean, it just seems like...
There's at least one leaky one. There's a couple that you just alluded to.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue. And I guess we're kind of on it now, so we'll talk some about that. The game with LA, like, I don't have an issue winning a game 6-5. I don't consider it ideal. But when your goaltender can make that big last-minute save and he had enough support from his teammates to score that many goals and grab 2 points, that to me is preferable over a team that constantly tries to win 2-1 or 3-2, like Flames teams with Mika Kiprusoff did for years. And I think that's part of the reason why they just never seemed to have the scoring depth or didn't have the right center for a game. There's a lot of different points you can make there. But my point is, I think if you're able to win a high-scoring game and your goaltender makes the save he needs to make, and this is kind of me echoing Grant Fuhr's comments in the past, you know, it's all about wins, and he got the win. I don't want to see it often, but I like the fact the team was able to pull it off and score that many goals in support of him.
And, you know, you just didn't you feel like the night was going to go good when Huberto scores right away? It's just like, oh, here we go. I did. As soon as he scored, I'm like, all right, shit's going our way tonight. I did.
Well, Keith Yandel was kind of pumping his tires, too, saying, like, prior to the game, and he expected to see a big game out of him. And I think he was bang on. And the cool thing about the goal he scored was, like, that second effort. You know, like sticking with the puck like that, like we don't know yet in Calgary how good this guy is and how good he can be, and hopefully this is the beginning of what we're going to see out of him.
And, you know, not that the only thing that would have been better on Saturday night, or not Saturday night, Monday night, was when you look at the score sheet, you see Huberto, perfect. We need him going. Mangiapane's been cold as hell. We need him going. He gets a second goal. You know, it's great to see Brett Ritchie keep scoring. I know you're not the biggest Richie fan, but if you got a fourth liner that's putting in points like he is and grinding and forechecking like he is, I thought he was amazing on the forecheck on Monday night.
Oh, he made that goal happen almost entirely by himself. Like that forced play, the turnover was fantastic. If he did that once every 5 games, I'd never want to see him out of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean,
and not even just a goal, but just a play where I think he is a good forechecker. To your point, like, he's definitely grown on me. I think he's earned a regular spot in the lineup.
For sure.
I always just thought he was a tweener of an NHLer, but I think Sutter's kind of unlocked the things that make him a decent hockey player, and he deserves to be where he is.
And he has decent speed, too. I mean, he's big physical body. When he gets in close, he can score. He's perfect for the right side on the fourth line, you know. And then
I started to turn on him in a positive way when he knocked out Jujhar Khaira a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I never want to see him get knocked out. Like, no. I don't mean the knockout itself, but the fact that he took that fight so willingly, it's like, you know what, this is a character guy. Like, I can see why his teammates like him. But now that he's actually contributing and skating well in that line, it's like, well, there's no better option to put on the fourth line right wing, to my mind anyway.
And then when Lindholm gets the fifth goal and then Rizicka scores the sixth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing we didn't get is we needed a Dubé goal, but we got... We got a lot of them checked off, and that will mentally change. And I'm not happy with allowing 5. I'm not. But winning a game where we can score 6 mentally changes everything for this offense. I really do believe it can get this team going.
Yeah, and I do too. I don't know that that the lines are conducive to doing that, not regularly, but with any amount of regularity. I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about them, and I'm a little curious about guys like Rusiska in terms of how is this. Remember Sven Berchi? Yeah. And he was on a big heater when he gets some opportunity, and there was all this excitement about him. Is it like that, or is this guy a legitimate NHL scorer? Or is he just a beneficiary of some really good line mates? The good news in either case, or in any case with him, though, is I think it proves that that top line was not just contingent on Johnny Gaudreau's magic. As much as he drove the offense of this team, it's nice to see that somebody else can step in, play with Lindholm, and also contribute offensively.
You know, during the losing streak, just things, our shot percentage was just so bad. And, yeah. I mean, just when you look at some of the stats, it had to happen. I mean, we had to start getting some breaks. We had to start getting some puck luck. And I feel like that kind of started to change against Winnipeg, and I really felt like we were catching some breaks. We caught a couple bad breaks in the LA game, too. A puck off of, God, whose foot was it? Was it Uyghur's foot into the top corner for the third goal, or I think it was the third goal. You know, we're still getting some of those bad ones, but, you know, just to get some puck luck and get that timely save, that changed everything. You know, you look at that save. Markstrom lets that in with 20 seconds to go. What are we feeling today, and what are we talking about?
An overtime loss, I figure.
We're probably pretty pissed off.
Yeah, because it's a game that definitely slipped away from them, or was sliding away. And I think it's a mark of a good team to, you know, to pull out the win when it looks like you're going to lose it. Because, I mean, a lot of teams in the league, obviously, they have fragile games, they're a fragile character, and that's a character win. Again, like you said, 6-5 is not ideal, but we'll definitely take it. But I think what you're saying about the shooting percentage, all that stuff's self-correcting. Okay. Anybody who thought the Flames were as bad as they seemed to be in some of that losing streak, that's completely erroneous thinking. It's just simple. It's metrics, it's chances, it's math. It'll straighten itself out. And when it does, which it seems to be doing now, now we can start to get a sense of what this team's really all about.
Exactly. Injury-wise, Stone's still out of the lineup with an undisclosed injury. Still no word on Shillington, unfortunately.
The only word on Shillington I heard this week was that Bradtree Living said they're in regular contact with him, which is more than we've heard since he left the team. So that's something, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know why my gut doesn't feel like it's going to be soon. I don't know.
I don't want to speculate on it too much. If I had to take a guess, I would suspect it's a family matter. The team immediately said it had nothing to do with substance abuse or anything of the sort. So whatever it is, hopefully he's back soon. But moreover, hopefully whatever it is ends well.
Yeah, for sure. I am a little worried about two other guys. Uyghur, I don't know if you noticed in the LA game, looks like he went awkwardly into the boards with his head, and grabbed his head like numerous times on the shift and then went down the tunnel. Did return and did play. That did concern me a little bit. And then at the end of the game, like right at the horn, Lindholm blocked a shot. And I watched him as they celebrated, and he never went over to Markstrom. He was trying to skate off on the sideboards by himself and hobbled off. And I did hear he did not come out for the three stars either. So that worries me a little bit. I'm just looking here now on the Flames PR page, and I don't believe they did practice today at 2:00. I did not get a report of anybody not on the ice, so I guess I'm unaware there. Dennis Gilbert did get recalled. He got sent down. Now he got recalled, and Nick DeSimone got sent down. That's a worrisome thing for me, and the fact that did you ever think we'd need Stone back so badly?
No. You know, it seems like every time we do a show, there's always at least one question where you ask me something, and my answer is so emphatic and so stone-faced. And I didn't even mean to say stone-faced, but that was perfect. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's a credit to how good he's been and what a reclamation he's been. We talked about that so much, and I could talk about it all day. I can't even remember what the hell happened to him. What was the nature of that injury?
I have no idea.
I know it's undisclosed, but I can't remember. I remember the play where he got hurt, and I just can't think of what the hell it was. But hopefully he's not too far off. And there's a few different reasons for that. Obviously, Shillington not being available, and Shillington was in our second pairing last year with Tanev, right?
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely flourished. So missing that guy is a huge factor. And then the other reason, though, that Stone becomes so much more important is that Connor Mackey has not been what we hoped. He's played a little better since he's been back in the lineup, but he was horrendous at times.
Yeah.
Like just looked like, you know, a deer on ice. Like, just... And I feel for the guy because I think he's very talented. I think he could be an everyday NHL player, but his poor play and Shillington being out have also made Stone so much more valuable.
Well, Stone is supposed to be our seventh guy. He was supposed to be our seventh guy, and he's freaking perfect for that job. He's perfect. Yep. He's the best seventh man in the league. But then you get Shillington not here, and then, you know, we hope that Mackey would be able to fill that void. And I can't give up on Connor Mackey though. I know.
When I was upset with some of his plays, and I tweeted a bit about it, and I probably gave the impression that I'd given up on the guy. I haven't at all. I just think that he's in a little over his head. He's got to simplify his game a bit. Probably take a few more games in the press box here and there, and just slowly be given the opportunity to find his way. I never would have thought the early returns would have been as bad as they were, and I'm sure he didn't either. Like, it's not like he's incapable. He's a good player. He just could not get out of his own way. Maybe he was just overthinking. I don't know, but it's way too early to write him off.
Yeah, I agree. And right now, you send him down to the AHL, he's got to go through waivers, and I don't think that's a road. We need to lose two guys on waivers this year, do we?
Yeah, well, and the other one is absolutely flourishing in Arizona, right? So.
I know. We've talked about that, though. I still...
Yeah, and good for him. I'm not bitter about it. It's a shame either. In a sense, but no, good for him. But the same thing could happen with the Mackey if they let him go, to your point.
I just feel...
Hang on to him.
Yeah, I just feel like it. Let's talk a little bit about this Huberto and Sutter rumored. I want to make sure everybody hears that rumored rift. Nobody that is talking about this knows. But Sutter did have a couple comments that had me kind of shaking my head when his quote was... I like that Lindy likes who he's playing with. He's our best forward, and he shouldn't be experimented with. I didn't really know how to read that, or how other players would read that, or if we should worry about how other players should read that. But Huberdeau's back now, and Huberdeau comes back onto the third line, and we get the Lindholm's our best forward. Should we worry about these comments, or are these just overblown?
Completely overblown. Who in their right mind is going to argue that Lindholm isn't their best forward if we're talking about a 200-foot hockey player?
I don't disagree.
I don't think. I mean, you can make it.
Why though? Is it just the feel good? We don't want to hurt anybody. Feeling world that we live in right now, where that we can't say a truthful comment without worrying about how it's going to affect somebody's feelings and how Huberto is feeling when he hears that. I mean, is that what this really is? Because that's what I feel like.
It's certainly not how Daryl Sutter is, as we know.
And that's good.
I don't think the comments had anything to do with him. I mean, and even the whole, like, he likes who he's playing with, I think that just, it doesn't mean he didn't like who he's playing with before. It's just, he's kind of finding his groove a little bit. I didn't think it had anything to do with Huberto. That's not how I read it, anyway.
I know, but everybody did. Everybody's instantly thought...
That's what they do, though, right? Because, you know, because Jonathan Huberto signs this massive contract, he's Johnny Gaudreau's replacement, he's all these things, and it's just like, people just looking... Well, there's nothing to look at. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was totally overblown. And I mean, as far as where Huberto wound up in the lineup, he's now alongside, like, the resident fixer of the Flames. Say you're playing like shit, you get to play with backs. That'll fix you. And it always does. The guy is so underrated. And lo and behold, Huberto scores. Now, I don't think he's going to stay in that line, but I think that's where he needs to be to find his game and get going and to really learn the way that Sutter expects him to play.
Do you think that Huberto, do you think he read into that? Or do you think he even cared? Here's why I say that. The only reason I'm worried about Huberto and how he reacts to positive or negative things is that Alan Walsh is his agent. And it makes me want to put a gun to my head because Alan Walsh creates so much bad shit. Marc-Andre Fleury. He creates so much negative shit that it makes me wonder why anybody has him as an agent, number one. And I Every time he tweets, I just cringe. I worry that he meddles into things, and I can't imagine that he's loving what Sutter's doing.
I think he has me blocked on Twitter, now that you say that. I'm pretty sure Alan Walsh blocked me for something that I said. That for some reason, that did a couple years ago.
Because he doesn't live in the truth. He lives in this crazy, fictitious world that hit. I don't know.
Well, I think to answer your somewhat rhetorical question, I think the reason people have him as an agent is probably because he gets some big returns. I'm sure he's a great negotiator because his PR skills are certainly not what gets the job done, right? I wish he'd keep his mouth shut. I don't believe an agent has any place to run their mouth like that. I think their job is to get the player the money and the term they're looking for and the security for the family, and then you shut the hell up.
Well, what
you don't get to weigh in the coaching decisions. That's how I look at it.
I know, but he thinks he does, and it bothers me that the players are okay with his clients are okay with that.
You got to believe there's some players that have spoken to him then and before and told him to keep his mouth shut. I'm sure there have been.
Is he not? I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong. Was he Dubois' agent too? And when Dubois said that he wanted to go to he had put out there that Dubois wanted to go to Montreal, and Pierre-Luc Dubois said, "No, I didn't say that." I swear.
I don't know if it was him or not. Let's see if I can find out that.
I swear that played. That was something because I remember the Micro for a Leak thing, and what a mess that was, and. As soon as I saw that Huberto had him for an agent, I was like, oh, no.
You know, it's funny. When you just Google Alan Walsh, there's so many stories.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, like Marc-Andre Fleury and Alan Walsh tweet, I think it was maybe a way to defend me. Like, guys trying to justify his shitty behavior. Like,
it's just not professional.
That's from 2020. You know, be mindful. It's a few years ago. What I mean, like, yeah, that's extremely unprofessional. But, I mean, why do guys like Steve Simmons still have airways? Why is Eric Francis still around the Flames? Like, I don't know. There's some merit or some value or some drama around the people they're attracted to. But I'm like you. I just think it's a waste of everybody's time.
I understand that they've got a report, and I don't want to say twist things, but
But that's kind of what it is. You know?
Story,
everybody has a narrative. Everybody's narrative is their own. So we all end up twisting things to some extent or another, right?
Oh, we all do.
Yeah.
Are you worried about this situation, or do you just think this is...
I don't even think there is a situation.
Just a mute.
I think that Jonathan Huberto is going to get better and better, and I think after the goal he scored and playing alongside Michael Backlund, like I said, I think that he is going to be... Remember when Sutter talked about Johnny Gaudreau and how great of a player he was? I think you're going to hear some of the comments about Huberto as the months wear on. He hasn't really earned that praise yet, but I don't think Sutter is... actively said anything or latently said anything against Huberto. I just think he's finding his way, and once he does, we're going to hear all kinds of praise for him. I don't think there's an issue between the two of them whatsoever.
I don't either, and I can't believe even people are saying, well, it was so disrespectful to say it was had to go take a shit. I'm just like, oh my God, what kind of world are we living in here?
Well, and I agree with that too, because you know it's way too sensitive. It's why anybody took that so seriously, or why there was any rumblings that. You know, the locker room didn't like it. It's like, oh, my, like, just let it go. It doesn't matter. It's no bearing on anything.
So one of the things that's driven me crazy this week, and I know it's driving you crazy too, are these lines.
Yep.
I'll read off the lines for listeners that haven't seen them or didn't get to watch. Lindholm is centering Ruziska and Toffoli, which... I don't necessarily hate that line, and it seems to be working. I can live
with that. There isn't hate it so far.
I can live with that, right? Then you got Kadri with Lucic and Mangiapane. Absolute horrible. And then you got Backlund with Huberto and Lewis. And then you got Dubé with Coleman and Richie. I know how I would tweak it, but you know what? I see these lines, and I freaking hated them. I complained about it all day on Monday, and we go out and boom, 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 all four lines score even strength goals, and I thought, what do I know?
Well, I kind of alluded to this earlier, too. I don't think you're wrong in terms of how you felt about it, because a lot of people felt that way, myself included. I don't think these lines are a long-term thing. I think it was all thrown in the blender and designed to get certain guys going, and it did. But I don't think the Lions, as they are going to score you 4 to 6 goals a game.
No.
Trevor Lewis just he's been really good, but he's just not.
It's not his role.
It's not at all. I mean, to play with a guy like Huberto, and even a guy like Backlund, who has a fair bit of offensive skill. Lucic with Kadri makes no sense. You know, get a guy that's coasting and can hardly skate alongside the fastest skater in the team.
The two Coleman, fastest think, guys in the team.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, you can make that argument. And then, like, the Coleman thing, like, I think Blake Coleman has...
I think he's been good.
I think he's been good, and I think he has more offensive potential than he's been given the opportunity to show. I think that if you're looking, if somebody on one of those top two lines is struggling, he's a guy you can say, you know what, you've put up 40 points in the past, let's try you there. He's got the wheels for it. Why the hell not? So the fourth line for him, I don't know. That one I have a hard time with.
Do you like Dylan Dubé at center?
I don't know yet. Do you?
No. We've tried this. We've tried this. Like, I don't know if I like Dylan Dubé anywhere anymore. I'm trying not to be mean, but I'm serious. Like, I don't think... Let me put it to you this way. And I will buy a Dylan Dubé jersey if he proves me wrong. Happily buy one. I don't see if this team goes on a long playoff run. I don't see Dylan Dubé on our roster. And I hate to say that.
I don't know. There's some stuff about his game that's really, really likable, but the lack of consistency and seemingly the inability to really find his game right now is concerning, especially for a guy that I had pegged as a breakout candidate, which many did for good reasons, but... he's a former world junior captain. Like, some of the pedigree there is in for important games, but...
But we worry... Okay, and I know that, and he was a huge superstar for the Canadian World Juniors. That's a whole different ballgame than he's playing right now. And quite honestly, if you look at his National Hockey League, he has had three-game spurts where we've seen the Dylan Dubé that we want. But unfortunately, they're followed by 12-game spurts where we sit here and go, is he a center or is he a wing? Is he strong enough on the boards? Does he win battles? Can he score? Like those are the questions I keep asking myself.
Yeah.
2 or 3 years into this experiment.
He's starting to remind me a bit of some of the other fast players that have come through Calgary. Dean McAmmond was one. I mean, McAmmond put up 51 points alongside Conroy Nagila when Nagila had 96. I mean, you or I would have got 30 points on that line, right?
Yeah.
And then the best example, I think, is probably Matthew Lombardi. Although Lombardi scored in the 40s once or twice and had some hands, but just never caught up to his feet, you know? Or you go way back to Rico Fatta, probably the fastest skater I ever saw play could throw a puck in an ocean. Like,
yeah.
So I'm starting to worry that Dubé's game is so predicated on his speed that he doesn't really have that much of a scoring touch. He's shown it in junior with Kelowna, obviously, but...
It's a whole different physical level. I think that's the downside. I don't think he can handle the physical battles, and I don't mean checking... And I don't mean him checking players. I think he's fine in that. But it's the battles down low that you cannot lose. Or the battle, you know, there just seems like some of those battles he doesn't come out on the winning end.
Yeah. No, there's been a lot of that in the lack of production for a guy who's been put in roles to succeed. It's pretty frustrating. So I'm still hopeful he's going to turn it around. I think he showed that he can based on the second half last season. But... I understand the frustration and the lack of belief in the player now because he's not giving us a lot to believe in.
And that being said, it sounds crazy because I didn't think he was that bad on Monday night. I actually thought he was pretty decent on Monday night. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I feel like at some point we need to get production. We just have to.
Oh, absolutely. He's not there to be a full-time grinder, you know? Like, he's expected to score more than Brett Ritchie, and he hasn't done that.
Yeah, that's scary.
Isn't it, when you really think about it?
Yeah, I never even thought of it that way. That's not good.
No, it's not. But there's still lots of season left, so hopefully it changes.
So if you were the one putting together the lines for tomorrow night, what would you put together?
I like Huberto with Backlund, like I said. It's just a matter of who should really be on the other side. And to me, it's either Mangiapane or Coleman. Somebody who's quick. Mangiapane would be tempting because I think with Huberto he could be deadly and Backlund can do all the heavy lifting for them. So I think that would be my answer in terms of the first thing I'd do. It's Mangiapane with Huberto and Backlund. Mangiapane would be on his off wing, but I think there'd be some interesting options there. I, I mean, I keep saying this, but like, I still think Lucic needs to sit. I think he's an absolute boat anchor on Kadri. He's been our best player so far this year.
I've got Rooney centering Lewis and Richie for my fourth line.
Well, that's a whole lot of righties.
I know, but Rooney's
left.
And then I would have Lucic coming in certain games.
Yep. I think he's going to be rotated out. I think it's better for him and the team. We've talked about that at length, and I'm sure it'll come up all season long.
And I guarantee it won't happen either.
No, it won't.
Here's who I would like to see together. I would leave Lindholm, Rziska, Toffoli. I would.
There's no reason not to right now. They've been really good, scoring.
Plus, I think it's a role that Rziska can flourish in, and we need him to flourish. That might be the best story of the month, is that he's had a couple good games, and we need him to do that. We need him to take that step.
He can be that offensive winger the Flames have apparently been looking for so long. He's shown so far he can be that. It's a very small sample size, but the other returns are very promising. There's no need to go out and acquire somebody from St. Louis or whoever else is being discussed out there at this point.
I don't even know how we can afford it. We got like $730,000.
And I don't think that we could, but even if there was a situation there that you could explore, that you could somehow make the money work, I don't think you do right now because you've got a guy who's shown he can provide what you're missing.
I would put Backlund with Coleman and Dubé. And I would
That'd be good for Dubé.
What?
That would be good for Dubé. I think that would actually get him going.
And I would love to try Kadri with Huberdeau and Mangiapane.
That'd be fun. I didn't list four lines like you just did. I was still kind of like playing them out in my head, and that's what I do every day. So I had a hard time coming to conclusions on some of it, but I like that line, and I think because Kadri's been so good, now Huberdeau's kind of turning a corner, there's definitely some potential there. I still don't love Toffoli on the number one line for some reason, even though he's been pretty productive. He's just such a second-line winger to me.
But you know what? I'm sitting here looking at these, though. It would be my second line. It would be Lindholm, Toffoli, and Rziska. It'd be my second line. Because I think I'd give Kadri, Huberdeau, and Mangiapane number one line. Because I really don't care what number you give it, to be honest with you.
Yes, you're taking your best player, best forward at least. And, no, I'd say best player, really, with Kadri so far this year. And putting him with two wingers who have tons of offensive skill who just each snapped out of a major slump.
Yeah.
So, makes sense to me.
I don't know. I got a question, though. We hear that we mentioned it slight little bit on the show about the St. Louis rumors. And this just came to my head as we were just talking about this.
I was wondering if me saying that would provoke you somehow.
It did. Would you ever consider trading a Dylan Dubé?
Sure, why not? He's still that tweener stage of his career where some guys think, oh, this guy's fast and has lots of potential. He never really panned out, and he's kind of a, middling winger or whatever. I still think people see value in him. So when you talk about things like a lengthy playoff run that you can't see him being a part of, I think you're saying that because you see him being packaged for somebody who will be part of a long playoff run.
if I was Brad Treliving, that would be my thoughts. It'd be like, hey, here's a piece that people might see value in. It would maybe save me a prospect or a draft pick. And it's going to get rid of 2.3 or 2.1? I can pull it up here quick. Off the cap, because Dubé's at 2.3. I almost feel like that has to be part of a package, or there's no financial way we're going to be able to make it work.
Well, if there's going to be something down the stretch where they want to acquire a player and the team willing to make the deal for said player wants the typical package, a pick, a decent prospect, a decent roster player. There's nobody else in that team that you're going to package ahead of Dylan Dubé that I can think of.
No.
Age, cap hit, potential. He's an attractive piece for all those different reasons.
Yeah. Defense. What's your thoughts? How are you feeling? Just you like it the way it's at, or what would you do there?
I think Zadorov is a little bit overplayed right now at his necessity.
Oh, my God. He's overplayed, and his mistakes are overlooked, too. And I'm not ripping on him because he has been good. But I don't understand how Lucic and Zadorov can throw freaking turnover after turnover after turnover.
They're big.
Everybody just looks away and is like, that didn't happen. That didn't happen.
The biggest guys on the ice for either team, the two of them make huge mistakes, and somehow it seems like they're being missed. Yeah, as far as the defense goes, I look forward to him slotting down a little further in the lineup because we see how he struggles when he gets overplayed. I'm really, really hopeful Mackenzie Weegar starts to show some of that offensive flair that he showed in Florida.
Yeah.
I think Noah Hanifin's been really good. I love his skating.
I think Noah Hanifin's been really good. You know, I was thinking about Mackenzie Weegar, and I can't remember where I heard it last week, but they were saying that, I want to say it was maybe Ryan Huska was saying that they've almost kind of, I don't want to use the term reined Weegar in a little bit, but they want to get him playing the Sutter style and then slowly open the doors a little bit more for his offense. It made sense to me.
It makes perfect sense to me. And actually, I want to bring this up just real quick because you touched on it, and I think it's important. The other night after the win, Sportsnet was hyping Darryl Sutter, presser coming up, post-game comments. Then Sutter didn't do it. Ryan Huska did.
Yeah.
And Ryan Huska was fascinating to listen to. He was like Paul Maurice light. Like, he was really – it was some of that dry shit you hear with Sutter, and that's fine. I mean, we all enjoy that. But it was like – really thoughtful answers, not just this pucks deep crap that we always hear in hockey. Like, I was really impressed with him. So I'm glad you mentioned Huska, because after watching that and knowing what I know about his record in the AHL and everything, like, Sutter's getting up there. I think Huska's in line to be next coach of this team at some point down the road.
Well, you know, when you look at our assistants with Muller and Huska, I mean, we got some pretty good assistant coaches here.
Fantastic. Fantastic, but somebody's going to be knocking on Huska's door in a couple of years if he doesn't get an opportunity. So
I think he got talked to last summer, didn't he? I think he did.
Chicago
talked to him, I believe.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that.
I could be wrong on that. I'm winging it a little bit, but
That's what we're doing here. So that's why I jumped on Ryan Huska. We're supposed to be talking about defense.
Would you do anything different on defense? Because there's one
under the current circumstances, no. I like the way they've been rotating in and out the younger guys, and I like the fact that even though he struggled mightily, like we said, Connor Mackey was able to drop back in. He didn't get banished forever to ruin his confidence and make him toil in the AHL and all that. I mean, I like the way it's been handled. I just wish the personnel was a little bit better, such that we had Shillington or that Stone was playing. This is what happens. This is why you need depth, like we talked about before. I mean, the team had virtually no injuries last year.
Yeah.
So it's a good test. I don't have any issues with any of the pairings. I just look forward to when we can have our proper top four back in a regular rotation. And guys like Zadorov, like I said, can ease up on their minutes.
I can't wait till we can have Hanifin, Anderson, Weegar, Tanev, and then Zadorov with Stone or with Shillington or, whatever, however that falls into place at that point.
But would you not go back to Shillington, Tanev? Yeah. Assuming Shillington's back at some point this year, because that was a great
year. I would. I would go Shillington, Tanev, Zadorov, Weegar. I would.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Weegar's good enough to cover for Zadorov's, just for being Zadorov.
Yeah. Because sometimes I think it's a mistake, and then he scores. So, I talk negatively about him today, but I like Zadorov. I do. I really like him.
I loved his checking game the other night. Who was it he leveled this couple times?
Arfidsson.
Yes.
I love how he puts that fear into other teams. He's that guy that you're not going to get an inch if your head's down cutting across the middle. You know what I mean? So he puts fear in other teams. So I like him. But one move that I am shocked didn't happen this weekend, or on Monday night, I guess, actually, is I'm surprised Melosh didn't get called up for the road trips. I thought he would get the call other than Gilbert, even though I did think the one game that Gilbert got in, he looked pretty decent.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. I mean, I think all those guys done a pretty admirable job. They've looked like and been treated like fringe NHL defensemen, and I think that's what they generally are, although we've still hopes for Mackey, like we talked about. But, they've all shown pretty good. As much as we've been kind of decrying the defense situation, I mean, none of those guys have been awful.
No.
We just wish we had what we had last year, which is a consistent regular six rotation with an occasional guy like Stone stepping in, and we haven't had that yet.
We were so fortunate last year.
That was crazy.
We'll be right back to preview the start of the six-game road trip.
Yeah.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
Well, the next big roadie starts tomorrow night, Thursday evening, as Calgary heads into Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay currently sitting fourth in the Atlantic, a much better team than where their fourth place standings are. This is going to be one hell of a road trip. This is not going to be an easy test for the Flames.
Nope, but I think it's going to be a very, very good thing for Jonathan Huberdeau. And I alluded to this last time they went out east, a week ago, and then he got hurt. But I think most familiar Barnes, the fact he scored last night, going back to Tampa, going back to Florida, even going to Philly, I really think this is where he starts to find his groove.
This is where everything changes?
I'd really believe that, because I think the familiarity of those buildings and everything that comes with that, having played in the East Coast for so long, I think it's kind of the tonic that he's going to need to really take his game to the next level.
You know what's one of the things that's kind of funny is we're kind of at that point in the season right now where the good teams rise up and the, I don't want to call them pretenders, but I'm going to call them pretenders, like the Buffalo Sabres, for an example, that started the year off really, really good and kind of fallen to earth. Philadelphia started the year off really good and has kind of fallen back to earth. This is a time of the year where the good hockey teams rise to the top of the standings. And I think we're going to see that, hopefully with Calgary. But This is where it starts. This is an important stretch for the team. It is a six-game road trip. Saturday afternoon, they're going to be in Florida. They're currently third in the Atlantic. Can't talk tonight. And then that is the return of Huberdeau and Weegar in the first matchup against Matthew Tkachuk. Do we get anything with this return of Matthew Tkachuk?
Just some conversation during warm-up, I think, and just his usual bullshit that he used to pull for the Flames, right?
Do you think he's going to do that? Do you really think he's going to do that?
I don't think he's the most mature player on the planet, but I think he knows his role well, and I don't think it matters if it's the Flames or somebody else. I think there's going to be a lot of chatter during warm-up, just friendly, good to see you type stuff and some joking around. In the game, I can see him being a real pain in the ass. In fact, I expect him to be.
Do you think anybody goes with him?
Oh, that'd be...
I'm just throwing it out there. It would be really weird to see, wouldn't it?
It would. He doesn't fight a lot,
No, he doesn't.
But I think it's possible, but who would answer that bell? I mean, it'd have to be an ex-teammate. There's nobody new that would fight other than maybe Weegar, and I just can't see that.
No. There's nobody in his weight class.
It's fun to dream, though, It's fun to dream.
And it's not like I hate Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, I don't...
But we loved him because he was on our team. Otherwise, he's just Brad Marchand again. He's just some asshole playing for another team that you can't stand. That's what he's going
to
be.
But I will be completely honest. I've looked quite a few times this year to see how Gaudreau and Tkachuk were doing and hope that they weren't doing that great. And when I see Columbus in the bottom...
That's when you hope your ex-girlfriend gets fat. We've all done that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to be an ass, but I don't want Columbus to be good this year because I didn't like the way Gaudreau left.
That's just part of being a sports fan, though. I mean, no matter how a person... I shouldn't say no matter how they leave, because the fact that when they walk away from a team for whatever reasons, I mean, it makes it harder. It's not like he got traded. And that sucks. And it still sucks, because it'd be nice if he was still in Calgary. But I know what you mean. The Blue Jackets are terrible for a variety of reasons. Now they've lost Zach Werenski for the year. I mentioned before I didn't think they had a center good enough to play with Gaudreau. And he's racking up the points. He's doing very well individually. Just the team is a mess around him. Tkachuk is doing well, but... I'd be lying. I want to be honest, too. I'd be lying if I said I wanted to see these guys, just have the best seasons of their careers. I still wish them well, and I think they're great hockey players. I don't have any bad feelings towards either of them. I still have a Gaudreau jersey hanging in my office at work.
I mean, I cheered for both of those guys when they were in Calgary. I had moments where I disliked both of them when they were in Calgary for different things that they did. But I can go through the whole depth chart right now and tell you a week or a stretch of games I didn't like everybody in there. And I can tell you a week or stretch that I liked everybody in there. That's part of loving the team, right? But I don't want Matthew Tkachuk to score on Saturday afternoon. I don't.
Oh, no. I never want to see him score against the Flames. I mean, nobody wants to see that, obviously. But, I mean, yeah, it's... it's just part of fandom. Like, it's not like you're sitting here being all bitter, but it's like, yeah, I don't want to see them have a great amount of success elsewhere. I want them to have it in Calgary. And they did have a ton of success in Calgary. It's just, they moved on and the Flames moved on and it is what it is, right? I'm kind of curious to see, like, the one guy we don't talk enough about, and the game is in December, the first one, was Sean Monahan and the Canadiens. Like, that guy just, you know, got kind of drummed out of town despite everything he fought through and how important he was to this team during what would have otherwise been some pretty damn lean years. So I hope he gets a really warm welcome. And every time Sean Monahan scores out of those three guys, I get most excited for him because I know what he's
to a point anyway.
Through. Yeah.
He's the only, and you know what, and Gabranson too, even though he hasn't been good, but every time I see Monahan score, I'm just like, yes, this is so great, and I've been super happy with how things have been going for Sean Monahan, and I hope that, Kyle, I really hope that continues, and I hope when he does come to Calgary that he gets one hell of a tribute, and I think he will. The road trip continues Monday in Philadelphia as they take on the Philadelphia Flyers, who are fifth in the Metro. They've won three of their last 10 games. A good time to get the Flyers on your schedule, and hopefully Calgary takes advantage of that on Monday evening. That one is, as we get an afternoon game on Saturday.
They always downplay interconference games. You know, like they always say, like, oh, they're on an Eastern road, swing, like, they're not playing any rivals or any divisional games. This is actually a really, really important road trip for the Flames.
Super
important. Like, really important. And it's a long one, like you said. It's going to be really interesting to see how this goes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and it gets started tomorrow night. It is November. It is Hockey Fights Cancer Month. I encourage everybody to get on over to NHL.com and donate to Hockey Fights Cancer. Cancer is a terrible disease that has affected each and every one of us in some way or another over our lifetime. So, Kyle and I both encourage that. And, we're back again next week, Kyle, to talk more Flames. Hopefully this week goes good for the team and for everybody.
Well, turning in the right direction. Let's hope it continues.
You can check Kyle out on Twitter. I'm at Brad Brood, and Kyle's at VanLewis14. Have yourself a good week, Flames fans, as let's get some more wins and keep this streak going. Let's have a winning streak, huh? I know you can't really call it a streak.
Yeah, let's run this to like 6-7 games. Let's have a big one.
We need it. Have a good week, Flames fans. Enjoy the games, and we're back next week talking Flames hockey. Connected Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. Check out the Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Host Brad Brood is on Twitter at Brad Brood, and host Kyle Lewis is on Twitter at VanLewis14. Like what you hear? Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Flames Unfiltered can be found on all the major podcast players. Want to watch the show? You got it. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group for every show. Subscribe while you watch. Thanks for listening, watching, and interacting. Enjoy the hockey action.
The win call, play on! Yeah, baby! Play on! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.